good evening. Welcome into Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff from C70 at the Bat. Find me on Twitter at C70. This is Tara Wellman with me, as always, making the show much better. You can find Tara at Tara Wellman on Twitter, and of course, Bird Seeds and Bird Tales. Bird Seeds on YouTube, Bird Tales over at the Cardinal Conclave. Tara, the Cardinals win today against the Giants. And in some weeks, it feels like, you know, when we've done this show, that last game is what, you know, brings us out of our misery or puts us into it. It kind of overshadows the whole week. But I don't, you know, as much as it was great to see the Cardinals get a win this week, it was still a pretty miserably terrible week for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, I think the win today was as much about just sort of salvaging some level of sanity after a homestand like this than being something to really celebrate. It was rough. I mean, it was rough any way you slice it, other than the starting pitching. Everything else was a bit of a struggle, but I think the starting pitchers had a sub-2 ERA on the homestand, and all of them went at least 6 innings, I believe. So if you're looking for a silver lining, I mean, that was great, but it's also the flip side of that is that they went 3-5 on an 8-game homestand in a week in which their starters were pretty phenomenal. So that kind of tells the story, I think, about how the week went.
Yeah, I just happened to pull that tweet up that Rob Rain sent out, 1.67 ERA for the starters. For the homestand, and you're right. I mean, you start out, you win 2 out of 3 against the Cubs. You're thinking, hey, this is great. I mean, the Red Sox are a team that is talented, but I'm reading tweets tonight that they may be firing their manager this week because they have underachieved. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's what I was seeing. And then you have a Giants team that has picked it up of late, but has been a disappointing team all the way around. And you lose, you know, 4 out of 5 to those guys. And again, last night, and I know this is going to probably take up the bulk of our time when I bring this topic up, but last night's game, I mean, you know, the Cardinals lose in 13 innings after, you know, scoreless 12. It just, you know, this team should be better than that. I mean, I know that, you know, the Giants have their own issues, and sometimes they can pitch for the most part, but this team should be able to score a run, and then they really should have scored a run, but Mr. Carpenter is, well, I've told you, he's the worst voice runner on the team.
Yeah, well, if there was any doubt, he eliminated that for sure. We've seen a lot of bad base running so far this year from the Cardinals. I don't know that there's anything that I can think of that was worse. Stephen Piscotty not scoring from second on a double off the right field wall is pretty close. But not only do you not want to make the first out at third, but you're in the... Carlos Martinez pitched 9 innings like it wasn't even a challenge. And you lead off with what should be an easy double with Jed Jerko and Yadier Molina behind you. The ball is in front of him. I don't know what he thought he saw or when he decided that he thought he had some Magnieri Sierra in him. But he doesn't, and he shouldn't have even thought about it. In fact, my not-so-inner monologue, I'm pretty sure my neighbors heard me, when the ball went off his bat, I started yelling, "Get down! Get down! Yes!" And then all of a sudden, I thought, he's going to try to turn this into 3, isn't he? Before they ever showed Matt Carpenter running. And then I just kept yelling, "No! Don't do it! What are you thinking? You've got to be kidding me!" And that was about it. Honestly, the game was over at that point. I think that, you know, there was a lot of commentary about the fact that Jerko and Molina didn't even put the ball in play after that, but their at-bats would have been under a completely different scenario if they were going up there with a runner in scoring position and nobody out, than if they're trying to be the hero and walk it off themselves. So it changed the dynamic of the game. It sucked the air and the energy out of the building. You know, that's a completely different script if Matt Carpenter just stays there at second base. I don't know. I was telling somebody today, I mean, a leadoff double is a win. I don't know why he needed to try to make it more than it was, because that's a win in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Why did it need to be any more than that? And I think it was just sort of a microcosm of all of the bad decisions that have been made by this team. And it was frustrating, I think, to the extreme, because everybody wanted that win, especially because of how Carlos Martinez pitched. You know, say what you want about pitchers' wins. I think it's a bad stat, but Carlos Martinez did everything he could possibly have done in that game and deserved a better result for the team based on his effort than what they got. And a lot of that had to do with Matt Carpenter just forgetting how baseball works.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, if nothing else, the pitcher's throwing out of the stretch instead of the windup with a runner on second base, and that can make a huge difference. And then, you know, a ground ball and a fly ball out, you've won the ball game. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, it's, you know, it's, but it's unfortunate, like you said, it's not something that we're surprised at. It's not something that, you know, and there was some discussion today about the fact that Carpenter didn't stick around to talk to the media after the game, which is his right. I don't think he has to. Apparently he doesn't do that very often. I imagine he does it more when he hits grand slams to end the ball game than maybe when he runs the game runs out of an inning. But you know, they're just this idea that I don't even know. I had a thought, and it, you know, you get so frustrated about talking about this that you just forget about what it is. It's just, I mean, this is Matt Carpenter. I mean, and like you said, you just knew he was going to try to do too much. And there is, I don't know, there's that mindset of aggression. And maybe this thought it was, hey, we haven't scored it, you know, we haven't done anything in eight innings. We've got to at least get to third so you have three, you know, basically three shots at getting him in or something like that. But you're right. He's not a speedster. He's not going to, I mean, it has to be just about perfect for him to get that triple, and that wasn't it. And it's just a mindset that this team seems to have, that they'd rather run basically out of control than to do a smart thing. And, you know, I mean, there are times where you'd like to see them run like that. I mean, not like that, but, you know, go first to third, take an extra base.
A little better than that, but
yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's what we've talked about. The base running needs to improve. But there's an argument to be made that the base running's not going to improve with this cast of characters, and so they ought to throttle it back again because they're more likely to do more damage than good.
Well, two things. First of all, on the not talking to reporters thing, my only thought on that is, can you imagine if Colton Wong didn't stick around mm-hmm. to talk to reporters after the game that everyone blamed on him? I mean, there's a little bit of a double standard if we're defending Matt Carpenter for not talking to reporters and would have absolutely destroyed Colton Wong for doing the same thing. But that's really neither here nor there. To your point about the base running, I think we continue to see this trend with this team. And ultimately it comes back to the management, where there's a roster of guys that have certain skill sets that don't have other skill sets. And yet there's an insistence on trying to be a certain kind of team regardless of the skill set of the players. Whether that's insisting on this base running thing that they've talked about for the last 3 years, or if it's trying to, I don't know, not utilize the athleticism of some players in favor of power from other guys. It just, mm-hmm. it seems like there's a disconnect between the team they say they want to be and the roster that they have to work with. And as long as that is the case, I think we're going to see this kind of mind-boggling baseball where you have guys trying to do things they're not capable of doing. And as much as I am still angry every time I think about Matt Carpenter last night, there's something to be said for the philosophy of the organization right now and how they're trying to change the dynamic of the team without really changing the personnel. And I'm not really sure that they're going to be able to do that successfully. And Matt Carpenter seems to be the perfect example of that.
Yeah, it's kind of like expecting the 80s Cardinals that Whitey ran them out there telling them to swing for the fences. They could do that, but they weren't going to be successful because that wasn't the team that they had. This is also not the 1982 Cardinals. I hate to break it to people, but if you hadn't figured that out.
But it's also not the Mark McGwire, Mike Matheny era Cardinals. They're not the power-hitting monsters. They're also not the small ball team. You have to find a way to win with the guys that you have without trying to just magically hope that they're going to figure it out someday.
You know, and you do think that this team kind of got a reprieve. You wonder how things would be different if they hadn't in 2013 had that miraculous year of hitting like everything with runners in scoring position and the years of, you know, like 15 where the pitching staff was just so great that no matter what you know, you could score one run and it wouldn't matter. If they had had not had those kind of anomalies, you know, where would this team be at? What would we be talking about for the last 5 years? I don't know. And maybe that would, it's difficult to change horses midstream. Maybe it's difficult to really revamp a team that's being successful on the field, even if it's not as successful as you'd like to see. I don't know. And I think there are always, we continue to say, there's going to be discussions and issues for John Mozeliak to deal with. And I don't know when a big shakeup could come with the team being, again, it's a lot easier to sell a shakeup when your team is, you know, 5 games under .500 than, you know, 5 games over .500 and right in the middle of a race. So I don't know. Now, we did see a little bit of the roster manipulation start this week. Johnny Peralta comes off the DL, and Magnarius Sierra goes back to, well, not back to AA. He goes to AA. He hadn't been there yet. And then we saw Stephen Piscotty come off the DL, and to make room, Matt Adams was traded to Atlanta for an A-ball prospect, and the Cardinals paid the Braves to take him. You know, one, I think that was a very interesting thing that I think anybody that thought Matt Adams had a value, and I will admit I was one of them, was rudely disavowed of that impression very quickly. I mean, obviously if the Cardinals' best they could do is to send a lot of money along with him and get, you know, a lottery ticket, as John Mozeliak himself pretty much characterized it, there was not going to be a whole lot of people knocking at the door for Matt Adams. But it's still interesting to see the Cardinals do this move and do it at a time when they're still carrying 13 pitchers. You know, the thought was they'd send somebody down and keep the hitters, but that isn't the way Mo went.
No, it was a little bit difficult to watch the way that developed. I think just because, like you said, to realize the almost non-existent value that Matt Adams had accumulated as a bench player, it was tough to see them hold on to him for as long as they did over the entire offseason, have him put in the work, tell him that he was going to have a role, all of those things involved in that, and then flip him for a single-A prospect. that was your big play. You held on to Matt Adams all this time for that. But at the same time, it's hard to really be upset about it as far as Matt Adams is concerned, because it really is the best opportunity that I think he could have hoped for. And, that opportunity might not have existed. In fact, I think it's fair to say it would not have existed if Freddie Freeman had not been injured. So that opened up the need for a first baseman for the Braves, and that changed the dynamic a little bit as far as the Cardinals having a place to put Matt Adams other than in their own lineup. But it is difficult to see his value seemingly drop so far from where everyone once thought it was, or at least could be. But I'm happy for Matt. I think that, you know, anytime you move away from the organization that you came up in baseball in, that's tough. But this is really the best opportunity for him to play every day and see if he's capable of doing that at this point in a different organization with different expectations.
Yeah, and I think everybody, you know, we really need to acknowledge that Matt Adams, you know, had a decent career here in St. Louis. I mean, it was not what everybody may have thought when he was coming up. You wonder how much, you know, regular playing time, and, you know, he had some injuries and things that played into it. You know, he had at least one good year. Clayton Kershaw still sees him in his nightmares. You know, there's things like that that stand out. But, you know, and also, Matt Adams did everything this organization asked. And, you know, he was not the one that suggested playing the outfield, but he went with it, even though it brought him a lot of ridicule and scorn. you know, that wasn't really his fault. I mean, that's not where he is expected to play. You know, when he was, you know, a guy that had been a starter, his second year in the big leagues, is now relegated to the bench when the team decides to move somebody over to play first. And, you know, no complaints. I mean, not that many players are, I mean, most players are savvy enough not to complain about that. Let's put it that way. But, I mean, he did, and he never seemed to have an issue with it. It never seemed to have a chip on his shoulder or anything like that. So you do. You hope that he succeeds in Atlanta. If he succeeds in Atlanta, there's a good chance he's going somewhere else when Freddie Freeman gets healthy, and you know, maybe he gets into a pennant race, and that would be great. You know, maybe the Cardinals will see him in the World Series. That'd be great, as long as they beat him. you know, I mean, that's what we want to see. And hopefully that's the case. I'm slightly afraid that it won't be, that this might be a beginning of the end situation, but I'm hopeful that it won't be. As for everything else, I mean, we saw Johnny Peralta come back. I know that aggravated a lot of people because a lot of people seem to have this idea that Johnny Peralta is, I don't know if he's the albatross around the neck or what of this team. But so far, you know, I forgot what he did his last at-bat, but the first four at-bats he's had since he came off the DL, he got hits. He played some decent defense today. I don't think Johnny Peralta is going to supplant Jed Jerko at third base, but he's proving at least right now he's still a major league player.
Well, I think the jury's still out as far as what he's able to do on a consistent basis, but if Matt Adams had no value, I can't imagine that the struggle that it's been for Johnny Peralta the last couple of seasons has built up a lot of goodwill as far as his capability at the major league level. So if nothing else, you know, he's going to have to play to show either the Cardinals or anyone else that there's still something there. So it's going to be difficult to watch if he doesn't pick it up. But at the same time, he's on the Cardinals roster, and they have to do something with that. If there's nowhere to send him, if there's no one who needs what he may or may not be capable of and is willing to take that risk, then they've got to figure out a way that he can be an effective and productive part of this team, which I think for the most part is going to end up as a bench guy, which I'm sure he's not going to like, but you're not going to take Jed Jerko out of the lineup the way that he's been playing. And that's just something he's going to have to deal with at this point, I think. Assuming that Mike Matheny feels the same way we do about not taking Jed Jerko out of the lineup, which, again, the jury's still out.
You know, and I give Matheny more credit than maybe he deserves. But I really, ever since, and I know we talk about it every week, I talk about it on every show every week, but ever since they've come back from New York, I feel like Mike Matheny has managed better or made better decisions. I mean, he's not been perfect, obviously, but I feel like the lineups are smarter. You know, we have seen Colton Wong out there. We've seen Jed Jerko out there. We've seen these guys get long runs. So I don't worry too much about Peralta playing every day. He will play some. I mean, like you said, he's got to build up some value. He's got to get some time out there. But Jed Jerko is going to get most of the time there. That's, you know, maybe I'm knock on wood, maybe I'm overthinking it, but I feel like that I don't know that I would have said that last year at this time.
Yeah.
And given Matheny's track record, but I feel better. Again, whatever, it may be too easy to point to that one spot, but ever since then, it still feels like things have been a little bit more stable. And speaking of stable, again, we referenced it a minute ago, the Cardinals still carrying 13 pitchers. Tyler Lyons makes a rehab start yesterday, does well. He pitches about 60 pitches, which is all that, I mean, that's more than he's going to need on this team because he's not going to be a starter. At most, he's going to be pitching like a couple of innings. And yet the Cardinals are hesitant to bring him back up. It seems a little bit, I don't know, there feels like there's something going on with this pitching staff that we're not completely clued into for me. What about you?
Yeah, well, I think that the way they've handled Trevor Rosenthal is a good tell that there's something going on that we're not really being told, which is really their prerogative. But the reasons that Trevor Rosenthal is unavailable more often than he is available, that seems sketchy to me, especially for someone that has looked so completely dominant when he is suddenly available. The way that they've utilized Kevin Segrist and when he is or isn't available is strange. And you're right, the way that they're hesitant about Tyler Lyons, when they're carrying 13 pitchers anyway, it's very weird what the dynamic is with the pitching staff at this point. And, you know, I was seeing some conversation about this on Twitter earlier, and quite honestly, it makes no sense to me to carry 13 pitchers, particularly when I think they only trust maybe two of the relievers, and that's a stretch. At this point, I'm pretty sure it's only Trevor Rosenthal on the days that he's actually available. Outside of that, there's Matt Bowman, but even he's looked a little more human lately. So when you're carrying all of these pitchers that don't really fit the need or the skill set that you need on this team, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I think that Tyler Lyons is quite possibly the missing piece for this bullpen right now because they don't have a guy that can go two innings and do it without causing a lot of anxiety. I mean, even Kevin Segrist last night, as soon as they put him back out there for a second inning, I don't know that there's anyone who felt like that was going to end well. So they need that guy that can go multiple innings if necessary, and Tyler Lyons has proven that he's capable of that when he's healthy. I think the question is, and maybe they're a little gun-shy from the season last year with Trevor Rosenthal and then with Segrist and then with Seth Maness and all these guys that pitched, and turns out they were hurt all along. Maybe they're trying to make some changes to avoid that again this year, or just to be very, very careful about taking some of these extra aches and pains more seriously. But it is making things a little bit strange as far as how they're handling the pitching staff at this point. And Tyler Lyons seems to be the next guy on that list of head scratchers as far as why they will or won't put him back in the mix.
Take this for what it's worth, but I did hear through the limited sources that I have, which is not really anything, but that Seattle had a scout at Tyler Lyons' rehab start yesterday. I don't know, that's what, you know, scouts show up for these things all the time, and I don't know that there's anything imminent, but you know, mixing that with all the kind of strangeness that, you know, that is that. I mean, they didn't send Lyons on to Los Angeles with the team, which, I mean, he should be able to pitch. You could have pitched at least in the second or third game of this series coming up. excuse me, if not before. It's just weird. You know, maybe Mo is working on something. Maybe he just, you know, was trying to get, you know, it just feels like, yeah, you got money in Jonathan Broxton, but it's not so much money you can't just let him go, especially now that you're, you know, basically getting close to a quarter, if not past the quarter mark of the season. It just feels like you could probably cut that and take your losses and not worry about it. You could always send down to Lavalle, who has looked pretty good. I mean, I don't think that he has to go down by any means, but if you're just looking for path of least resistance, you could do something of that nature. All these things that could be done, and like you said, there are pitchers out there that you feel okay about, but they're, you know, and depending on the situation, you know, I am a bigger person on Sokolovic than some, although he did give up a couple home runs today. It was with a big lead. You know, but there are some people down there you don't want to see. Brett Cecil still hope. I mean, granted, he went the Carlos Martinez route. He cut his hair. And so far, since he cut his hair, he has not allowed any, you know, he's retired the three batters he's faced since he cut his hair. So, you know, maybe this is the team needs a good barber. I mean, that's basically what we're going to get at right now. I don't know.
You know, whatever works, right?
That's right. That's right. also, not related to this year's Cardinals, but something that may have impact years to come. The Cardinals this weekend found out that yet again they were runner-up in a big sweepstakes as they did not sign Cuban defector Luis Robert, who they had been rumored to be in the mix for, and a guy that pretty much everybody felt like they needed to sign, being the fact that they have no draft picks this year for the most part, and this kind of talent is very difficult to have a chance at. Original reports were that the Cardinals, you know, actually did outbid the White Sox, but he chose the White Sox anyway. Following up reporting did not indicate that the Cardinals again were shy on the money. Now, it may not have mattered. You may have had to go about $5-10 billion more on a deal than the White Sox to get Robert to change his mind. I don't know. But it's still, when you put this with David Price, when you put this with Jason Hayward, and again, those things are a couple of years old now, but the process and the people are still the same. It's getting more and more difficult to defend this organization's willingness to spend what it takes or to be able to close a deal, if nothing else, whatever it may be. Maybe it's not money, maybe there's something else, but they're not able to close the deals that they need to.
Yeah, there do seem to be some conflicting reports about what the best financial offer actually was. Maybe when those final numbers do end up coming out, there'll be a little more clarity on that. It seems both the White Sox and the Cardinals think they made the best offer. So at some point, hopefully we'll have a little clarity on that. There are two options. If they didn't make him the greatest financial offer, then the question continues to be, what are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is going to be a good enough opportunity that weighing the rarity of the chance at a player like that goes into the decision as far as his talent? Now, I actually brought that up on Twitter with Derek Gould, who was talking a lot about this, of course, when it all came out. And he said that he's actually asked the organization that question about measuring the size of the opportunity and including that in the way that they evaluate the value of an individual player. But I think that it's easy to say that, as they have apparently told Derek Gould, that yes, they do take that into account. It's a little bit harder to believe to some extent at this point at face value, because it just seems like there's still this line that may or may not be a movable line that seems to just not be enough. Mm-hmm. Whatever the number is really irrelevant in this side of the conversation, because at some point this organization has to have they have to have a star to build the future around. Mm-hmm. I think Carlos Martinez does that on the pitching side, but Carlos Martinez is not going to hit 30 home runs. So
don't tell Carlos that.
You know, if he wants to try, that's fine. But I'm just saying, he may or may not be the face of the organization. And when you have the opportunity to go out and get a player like that without needing a draft pick, without going out and doing something absolutely absurd in free agency, or without trading a significant amount of major league talent, you know, that all has to come into play, I think. And it's hard, I think, for fans to look at this opportunity, see it as the Cardinals' only real shot at a superstar player, kind of a franchise player type scenario, and know that they keep saying there's money to spend, but we're not going to spend it all in one place, which seems to not really be resolving the problem. So from the financial side, it's difficult from a fan's perspective to see them not willing to go a little bit extra. I think I made the point yesterday that talking about overpaying these professional athletes when we're talking in the tens of millions of dollars is a little bit absurd to me. You know, what is overpaying when we're talking about 25 million versus 35 million? Is that really a fair conversation to have? But nonetheless, that seems to be that there's somehow a line there that this organization, from the top down, it seems, is not willing to cross. But then briefly to the other side of the point that you made, if it wasn't a financial decision, I think it's very concerning that the Cardinals can't sell themselves as one of the winningest organizations in baseball, to a young kid from Cuba. I mean, what is it that, now I know he had some personal ties to players in the White Sox organization, and sure, that plays in, but I mean, if we're talking about the difference between having a superstar and not having a superstar was a video presentation, let's maybe work on our sales pitch a little bit.
Well, and I mean, the Cardinals, you know, just this, you know, this past spring signed Garcia, Adolis Garcia, yeah. Mm-hmm. who is a good friend of Luis Roberts. Right. So, you know, if nothing else, and then you have a guy like, you know, you have Alamedes Diaz playing shortstop for your team. You obviously, as an organization, are comfortable with Cuban players.
Right.
How do you not put that out there? Why is that, you know, a different thing? And again, like you said, it may not have been anything like that. It may have been, you know, that he really wanted to play for the White Sox, and, you know, all things being equal or close to it, he was going to choose Chicago. But, you know, it feels like the Cardinals should have made it where he might, you know, kind of gone over the top enough to make him change his mind. Now, again, we're talking about a very young player, and not all of these players develop. I mean, it's very possible that, you know, he'll never make the major leagues. I mean, it seems unlikely, but it's possible. But that being said, you know, even if you paid him $35 million and you paid the league the $35 million fee, you know, that's still less than you paid Dexter Fowler over the next 5 years. You know, and you have him locked up for this period of time. Is that not worth it? So, again, it would be nice to know. Obviously, we never get to know all the information we want, but it would be nice to know what the internal calculation number was and what they offered and how much those things differed, if they did at all. Because it feels like, on our side of things, the Cardinals calculate a value, they make that bid, and they don't go past that value. They don't... You know, I know that they said they got uncomfortable, I think, in the David Price negotiations. And to be fair, they thought they had him. But, you know, sometimes they can get more than just uncomfortable, I think. And I think it becomes difficult. It's more difficult for fans to think that maybe they're going to be players here in a couple of years when the big names start coming out on free agent market, when you've got Machado out there who seems to be a perfect guy for the Cardinals to go after. I mean, how does a fan base legitimately believe that they're going to do this when they see failure after failure?
For two reasons. One, One, because are they going to make the financial commitment, which seems unlikely, but also because the more this continues to happen and the more there's this underlying story about, well, it wasn't really the money, it was fill in the blank, whatever else turned them off of St. Louis, you're going to have these free agents out there who hear those same stories, who hear those same things, who are now, it's going to be even harder to convince them to come to play in St. Louis. And whether those reasons are legitimate or not, you can't tell me that's not going to factor in. You can't tell me that what Jason Hayward or John Lackey or David Price or anyone else thinks about the value of playing in St. Louis isn't going to be in the back of the minds of Machado or anyone else when it comes to choosing between two very similar offers financially. So they're digging themselves a hole in that regard as well if they can't figure out how to sell players on playing in St. Louis, which should not be that difficult. I'm just going to throw that out there. There are a lot worse places to play, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and I think we've come a long way in a short period of time. You know, it used to be we talked about people taking that hometown discount, the idea that they'd take a little less in pay for the fact that they're going to win ball games in St. Louis, or they're going to play again in a full stadium every night. That is, I mean, you never even hear the idea of hometown discount anymore. I mean, and we saw that Yadier Molina did not take a hometown discount to sign this extension. I mean, $20 million a year for 3 years. If that's a hometown discount, I want some of that as well. It's just not there anymore. And I don't know if that's the game that has changed, or if it's the front office and the way that they're approaching things that has changed. I don't know. It is interesting. Now, I mean, the Cardinals have always, you know, you can go all the way back to Mike Hampton. They've always come in, you know, been in some free agent bidding and never gotten there. It's not like it's necessarily a recent phenomenon only. And maybe they have to go back to what they did in the early, you know, they got McGuire via trade, they got Scott Rolen via trade, they got Jim Edmonds via trade. Maybe they have to go and, you know, give up the pieces that would require them to trade for one of these guys and see if they can sign them for an extension. Because getting them to come to St. Louis without experiencing the atmosphere firsthand seems to be becoming more and more difficult.
Yeah, and that would be a problem to me if I was in the front office for this organization. That would be as important to fix as just about anything else.
Yeah. Cardinals have an off day again tomorrow. This is, I think, the most off days I have ever seen in a 2 week period that wasn't like the beginning of the season. And again, then I think the Cardinals then play, what is it, like 30-something games and 30-something days. I mean, it's going to be a long run after tomorrow.
Yeah.
But they'll have to deal with it. And they go out to Los Angeles. They get to face Clayton Kershaw without Matt Adams. It's probably a good thing they won today, because I don't want to see that loss. Although they've always had their successes against Kershaw. It seems to be less likely to happen in the season. And then they go face the Rockies, who are still leading the West. This is going to be another tough week. And we talked, you know, 2 weeks ago, we had this run, but it was against the Braves and the Marlins, and we said, let's see how they do when they step up in competition. They beat the Cubs, but they struggle against the Red Sox. They struggle against the Giants. Now they're playing teams that are, at least on paper, better than the Red Sox and Giants. This becomes, in their home park, they're not in Busch. This becomes a very difficult week, doesn't it?
Well, to be fair, they seem to play better away from Busch point, so that might work to their advantage. But no, it is a big week, and just like it was a bit of a barometer to go head-to-head with the Chicago Cubs after that opening series in St. Louis, I think this is a barometer in a different respect, in that these are teams that are actually playing well. These are teams that they're going to have to be able to beat if they want to, make any sort of postseason run. And of course, it's early to be talking about that, but I don't think it's really too far out of the equation to look at these two teams as the kind of teams, if not the teams in and of themselves, that they'll have to beat down the road if they want to put themselves in a position to play into October. So these are the kinds of wins. You know, he's talking about you have to beat the teams that you should beat. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Cardinals did that this week, but the only way to really rebound from that is to play like they did against the Cubs, like they did when they were playing lesser teams, and to do it 3, 4, 5 days in a row. That's what they need to see out of themselves. That's what they need to expect out of themselves, I think, at this point, and to some degree demand that out of themselves and each other if they're going to be able to live up to you know, this crazy race in the NL Central.
Yeah, it's just, again, the good thing is the NL Central is not anything that's what people are going to write home about. The Cardinals are still, I think, just a game and a half ahead behind the Brewers, which, as much as the Brewers are improved, seems unlikely that they're going to stay there. They're still a game ahead of the Cubs. They're still right in this right now. But yeah, like you said, they've got to step up against these teams if they're going to continue to do that, because, you know, it was just, you know, what, last week we're talking about the first place Cardinals. Now we're gnashing teeth and trying to figure out what this team is really all about. And it would be much better to be on the upside of this bipolar situation come next week. But until then, we'll have to wait and see. And so join us next week to see how excited Tara and I are about this West Coast road trip. So for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.